coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Wednesday, January 5th, 2022. What happened to 1978? Okay, I'm just asking. Eric the Tech, how are you today, sir?
Doing good.
All right. Look, got a lot of information to get into this segment. Going to get right into it. A couple of brief things. If you didn't hear or listen or watch yesterday's show, please do me that favor and watch it as the baseline for today. And if you don't want to hear me talk, if you don't want to hear, go to HagmanReport.com, click on the show episode, and that'll bring up the episode description, all the links. Do me a favor, watch the links with Joe Rogan and Drs. Peter McCullough and Robert Malone. Do that. That's 6 hours, six plus hours of video and audio information there. It's required. It really is. Also watch Dr. Zelenko, his explanation of how the hydroxychloroquine was demonized by Rick Bright in the White House. That's important to do. All right. With now building on that, I just want to give you some information. Look, tomorrow, Steve Quayle tomorrow. I can't wait for that. Excuse me. Now, just got information from, you remember Landon from SaveThem.org. He was on. He was in studio, in this studio. You remember that? There we go. SaveThem.org. I just want to say congratulations. I want to thank him and his team. Again, good friends of the program, working with and on Russ's team. The arrest of three traffickers and saving three teenage girls here within the last few days. I'm not going to give out any additional information. That's a cause worthy of supporting, and that's SaveThem.org. And I want to just say thank you to Landon for everything he's done and is doing. And you know, one at a time, maybe one at a time. But these three traffickers, that I'm sure that will in fact save hundreds. All right. You know, I spoke with. Actually, two doctors in the last 24 hours. And I also compiled some information from, local hospital systems. Okay, local hospital systems here, as well as some other parts of the country. I'm convinced of the following. Number one, the Obamacare. Remember the launch of Obamacare. What was the objective? Affordable health care, right? It's named the Affordable Health Care Act. Oh, we're going to make health care affordable to everyone. No, okay. How's that working out for you, by the way? Just asking. After speaking with the physicians, one I know has complete privileges, hospital privileges. As a matter of fact, is on a the board of one hospital. And then another doctor, very patriotic doctor, a good friend of the show. The combined information, in addition to my research, tells me the objective here, one of the objectives, including the objective using this SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, is to destroy the healthcare system. Absolutely destroy. Take out 25% of the economy. And if you think about this, how do you destroy our national economy? Remember, we are an energy-based fiat currency, shall we say, or at least the world reserve currency is based on our ability to ensure the free flow of oil across the world. That's really what the fiat currency represents. But they want to destroy our monetary system. Destroy the nation, but destroy our monetary system and destroy our healthcare system. So how do you destroy your healthcare system? Very quickly, what are we seeing right now? You're seeing an increase in admissions and hospital admissions. you're seeing headlines like ICU beds or COVID ward beds, 94% at capacity. Okay. Well, first of all, they hobbled the healthcare staff in such a way where they mandated, for example, many of the healthcare systems, you've got to get the jab. It was a mandate within the corporate structure of the different healthcare services, especially the big ones. And that's not true here locally yet, but that's what they did. So a lot of the people, nurses, support staff, even janitorial staff, were let go. Now, in addition to that, or because of that, what happened? They had to shrink in some cases. Now, this is not all, but this is one aspect of this, because this is a really big topic. And you have to ask the right questions, too. If you are a journalist out there, if you are looking into this, you've got to know what questions to ask. Because, for example, 95% at capacity, soon to be 100%. Well, what's capacity? What's capacity today in 2022 versus 2019, we'll say, since you've really destroyed or decimated the staff and the staffing over the last 2 years? You might find out that in 2019, the ICU capacity was 100 beds. This is an example. Today, because of the inability for nurses and such, doctors, now you might find that capacity to be at 50. And that could be maybe 100 in September of last year and 50 today. Capacity. Think about this now. As a result of, in part, of decimating your staff through mandates. And then getting other people to in there, or getting the remaining people to work double, triple shifts. And by the way, they're getting paid handsomely. I know one nurse locally here, my goodness, I think 150 an hour. A nurse, 150 an hour, overtime. All right. I don't begrudge anyone to make money. I mean, look, you make money, but where's that money coming from? Okay, so think about this. The capacity of hospitals. And that includes not just the ICU, but the entire hospital. 1,000-bed capacity might now be 700-bed capacity or 500-bed capacity, whatever the case might be. Okay, so now we're at 95%. Well, of course, but maybe 2 years ago, that would have been 45%. You get the idea. But they're using then the media to say, look, to exploit those numbers and say, look, this is because of this pandemic. And then blame the unvaccinated, like Macron did, to depersonalize and deperson those people who refused to get the experimental jab. So this is the gift that keeps on giving. And this goes back to really the Affordable Care Act in a number of different ways, because the intent here is to collapse the system, to make it a really a socialist system under the Affordable Care Act. But you know, there was problems because free enterprise kept sticking its head up there. And the Affordable Care Act, some of the provisions weren't put into effect, so they couldn't entirely socialize the healthcare system. So They're using this to put the final nail in the coffin, and this is going to collapse. And here's the scary part of this. When this collapses, not if, but when this collapses, and it will, when this arises again or it gets rebuilt under this socialist kind of environment, what's going to happen? Oh, you will get the jab, or you won't get treated. You will get the jab or jabs that we tell you, or you won't get that operation that you need, or the transplant that's already happening, and so on. They've got you. They have got you. If you are dependent on medication, insulin, for example, they've got you. This is the goal. And watch, because you won't recognize the healthcare system, really, I believe, in 12 months. And by that, I mean, you will not recognize our monetary system, our nation, in 12 months if this is allowed to continue. All right, I want to get right to this, folks. if you don't believe this is planned, all planned, and I know you do. If you're watching this, you know this is planned. Look, back in April 25th, 2003, this is compliments of the source, Dr. Martin, and I verified all of this as well. April 25th, 2003, the CDC filed a patent for a coronavirus. Think about this. Coronaviruses occur in nature. They're naturally occurring, correct? Yes. Say yes. Yeah. Okay. So you can't patent something that's in nature. So that means if it received a patent, either that patent is illegal or that coronavirus contains an artificial component, a manufactured component. Now, if it's the former, well, it's against the law. If it's the latter, oh, geez, it's against the law. But it's against, more importantly, 35 U.S.C. Section 101. And I'm going to have Dr. Martin tell you about this. And interestingly enough, 4 years later, May 14th, 2007, the CDC filed a petition to keep the patent information private, to keep it from all of us. Now, wait a second. The CDC is an organ of the federal government. Am I right? Right. Who paid for that? We did. All right, just saying. And of course, you know, in 2010, the Rockefeller Foundation, Operation Lockstep, you've heard Alex Jones talk about that. All the information is online, this fictional scenario. But let's get into this video. It's a very well done, very well made video. And I've got some additions to this. But let's start about 5-6 seconds in. And with Dr. David Martin talking about the start, which is April 25th of 2003, this will be sourced in HagmanReport.com in the episode description box. I did not do this video. Whoever did, God bless you. Congratulations. The source and the where it came from will be in that program description box for attribution and for your download. Go ahead and run. Start it. Go ahead.
April the 25th, 2003. The U.S. Center for Disease Control filed a patent on the coronavirus transmitted to humans. Under 35 U.S. Code Section 101, nature is prohibited from being patented. Either SARS coronavirus was manufactured, therefore making a patent on it legal, or it was natural, therefore making a patent on it illegal. If it was manufactured, it was a violation of biological and chemical weapons, treaties, and laws. If it was natural, filing a patent on it was illegal. Then either outcome, both are illegal. In the spring of 2007, the CDC filed a petition with the Patent Office to keep their application confidential and private. They actually filed patents on not only the virus, but they also filed patents on its detection and a kit to measure it. Because of that CDC patent, they had the ability to control who was authorized and who was not authorized to make independent inquiries into coronavirus. You cannot look at the virus, you cannot measure it, you cannot develop a test kit for it. And by ultimately receiving the patents that constrained anyone from using it, they had the means, they had the motive, and most of all, they had the monetary gain from turning coronavirus from a pathogen to profit.
In 2010, the Rockefeller Foundation released a 54-page document called Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. Page 18 features the pandemic scenario, Lockstep. A world of tighter top-down government control and authoritarian leadership, with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback.
First, we've got population. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Pause that right there. So that's Bill Gates. Now, this segment, that TED Talk, has been fact-checked to death. Let me tell you something. The fact-checkers are saying, well, it doesn't mean, he didn't mean what he said he what he said. All right, he didn't mean that. In other words, using vaccines to depopulate or to inhibit the population of the planet. That's not. He didn't mean that. But as you go through that TED talk, and I'm not gonna do that. He is talking about reducing the carbon footprint, and of course, he's talking about depopulating the planet. Yes, he is. So in that context, what else is that to mean? And he's talking about a carbon neutral environment, taking carbon emissions down to zero, meaning you have to get rid of one. You saw that formula up there. Okay, so that's what that is. And again, the Rothschild, did they say that? Well, go ahead and continue with this because there's some really good additional information in here that we'll continue with. Go ahead.
October 13th, 2015. Patent is registered under the name of Richard Rothschild for a COVID-19 test kit.
Now, October 13th, 2015. How is that even possible? COVID-19.
If we start now, we can be ready for the next epidemic.
Now, this is 2016 for the radio listeners.
March 2nd, 2016. In the Government of Canada's website, there's mention of COVID-19. Peter Daszak, president of EcoHealth Alliance, reiterated that until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at an emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, he said, we need to increase public understanding of the need for MCMs such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process, Daszak stated.
Now, to me, Daszak is the bag man. This is 2017 now.
October 2017, Johns Hopkins conducts a study on a pandemic. In 2017, the World Integrated Trade Solutions, a division of the World Bank, started shipping COVID-19 test kits throughout the world.
Okay, you heard that, right?
Was that simply a coincidence?
And I was able to verify that this is true. Now, and there it is on the screen. You can see.
There is no question that there will be a surprise outbreak.
Anthony Fauci knew as early as January of 2017 that we would see an outbreak before the end of 2020.
Peter Daszak at a global health conference in 2017 confirmed that working with USAID, EPT Predict program, and funding through NIAID to work on coronaviruses in China, we were able to test out this idea, and I don't need to read anymore. It confirms it.
Again, whoever did this, very well done. 2018 now.
2018 was a very big year for simulations. Johns Hopkins had ClaDex pandemic simulation with tabletop players who were seen again a year later in Event 201, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation-sponsored event. ClaDex laid out problems and solutions.
1 year to produce a vaccine for this is too long.
We should have stockpiled, we didn't, but we're gonna have to look at that vaccine question to see if we can speed up the delivery.
And if we do not have the public with us,
all right,
we're in big trouble.
Stop. In fact, if you can just shimmy that back like 2 seconds, 3 seconds, I want people to really know the woman talking, Tara O'Toole. Folks, I want you to really know Tara O'Toole. We're gonna have a little discussion here about Tara O'Toole. Can you advance that just a little bit more, just so you get the woman talking? Just a little more forward. Tara O'Toole, right there. Okay, folks, I want you to look at her, remember her, remember the name, Tara O'Toole. There it is. Because she is one, in my view, in my opinion, a big tool. And I mean that as a tool. She is a big pharma lobbyist and happens to be a bioweapons expert. Now, I want you to keep that up there, okay? Because in my view, psychopathy or psychopaths come in all different shapes, sizes, and appearances. But just that's my opinion now, okay? And, you know, we're still allowed to have opinions. She is was the director of a CIA hedge fund called InQtel, I-N, the letter Q, tel. In 2009, now remember, a lot of things were converging. Affordable Care Act, Barack Hussein Obama, fundamentally changing everything, right? Took a little longer, but Barack Hussein Obama nominated O'Toole as the Undersecretary for Science and Technology. But you know, during her confirmation hearing, she got a lot of heat. Why? Because she was also privately, confidentially, covertly the strategic director for a pharma lobbying company called Alliance Biosciences. Now, this is where it gets really strange. All right. When you start digging down into finding out what Alliance Biosciences is, oh, it gets muddy, because Alliance Biosciences is a front company. It's an unincorporated front for an organization created by Ibrahim El Hibri. Who the heck is that guy, Ibrahim El Hibri? And in addition to former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral William Crow. Now, okay, El Hibri has a bioweapons vaccine, if you will, anthrax-related facility in Ohio. The federal government poured a ton of money into it. Wasn't enough. But long story short, El Hibri, I could do a whole show on Ibrahim El Hibri. I could do an entire show on him. Because there are some awfully weird, odd connections to anthrax of 2001. I'm going to just put that right there. Park that right there. Just imagine everything taking place right now, taking place in 2001. All right. But getting back to Ms. O'Toole, I should note that Alliance, the front for Ibrahim El Hibri, the Alliance spent some $500,000, which really is chump change, right, to increase the biodefense budget. She lobbied Congress and the Department of Homeland Security. Now, Richard Ebright, a Rutgers microbiologist who knows Miss O'Toole, said, and I quote, "She makes Dr. Strangelove look sane." Now think about that statement. She advocated for massive biodefense expansion. But you know what the weird part about that is? She also advocated for relaxing the provisions for safety and security. All right. Now, hold that thought, because she was like one of the big players in all of these simulations, going back to 2001, I might add. Now, let's see here. You heard of Operation Dark Winter, right? Well, guess who shows up in Operation Dark Winter, the exercise that simulated a covert attack on the United States by bioterrorists? O'Toole. Yep. Now, she, again, during her later confirmation hearings, she was faulted for using the various exercises to promote her biosecurity agenda using hyperbolic pandemic fantasies. She's also discussed in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book about Dr. Fauci. So she was involved in the Dark Winter exercises that were about the transmission of smallpox. And she was the one that got everyone all, you know, hot and bothered about this. But she has this really strange enthusiasm for bio-germ warfare. She's been blamed for allowing that her enthusiasm for clouding her scientific judgment. And I'm quoting now from RFK Jr.'s book, Dr. O'Toole has not sought balanced scientific input in her thinking, that she shows a lack of analytic orientation to scientific issues, and that she's generated hype about bioterrorism that she will feel obligated to defend rather than pursue a balanced approach. All right, let's go back to the video because I'm running short of time. Let's go back to the video where we left off. Can we do that or no? Where we left off? All right, because there's some important stuff in here.
Thus, we're in big trouble.
On April 2018, Bill Gates fears that there's a coming disease that could kill 30 million people. And then in May, Bill and Melinda Gates think a weaponized disease may be the biggest threat to humanity. They're very worried.
It's not prophecy if you plan it.
Bill Gates also simulated a pandemic that started, of all places, in Wuhan, China.
It's a coincidence.
While at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Dr. Ralph Baric was giving a lecture on how to profit from a pandemic.
Go figure. It's all coincidence. And one more here.
In September of 2019, the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, a division of the WHO, produced a study called A World at Risk. One of the progress indicators by September 2020 was to be the deliberate release of a lethal respiratory pathogen.
Remember, they already had SARS-CoV-1.
This can be found on page 38. Also in September 2019, the WHO released the Global Vaccine Action Plan and the Decade of Vaccines. Coincidence?
On behalf of our center and our partners, the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to our audience here in New York, as well as our larger virtual audience participating online today. The Event 201 scenario is fictional. Today's scenario is going to simulate meetings of a multi-stakeholder group called the pandemic emergency,
and in some places riots. This led to violent crackdowns in some countries and even martial law. The public lost trust in their respective administration. Economists say the economic turmoil caused by such a pandemic will last for years. The societal impacts, the loss of faith in government, the distrust of news, and the breakdown of social cohesion could last even longer. A new coronavirus. Infected people got a respiratory illness with symptoms ranging from mild flu-like signs to severe pneumonia.
For a few more minutes, you can go to HagmanReport.com and the link will be in there. This gets into the World Health Organization Global Vaccine Safety Blueprint 2.0 background research published in July of 2019. Now, if you can bring that up on the screen, the link there. I downloaded the PDF. I went through this three or four different times. And you know what, folks, you've probably seen this, okay? You probably know about this. But just to reiterate what is taking place here, the everyone that you saw taking part in these exercises, everyone you saw mentioned, everyone, the planners, the CDC, the World Health Organization, all of the NGOs, all of the front companies, all of the participants, one of the big things that they planned for was A, vaccine hesitancy, and B, potential uprisings. And they planned for this in the Global Vaccine Safety Blueprint 1.0, as well as 2.0. And the 1.0 PDF is still online at the World Health Organization. It's a couple of years prior to that. But everything is focused through 2020 to 2030. Now, if you go to page 6 on this, scroll down to page 6, the bottom paragraph, just so people know that I've done my homework, I've until my eyes bled on this, the bottom paragraph on page 6. All right. Check this out. I got to get there myself. Okay. Not the Roman numeral 6, but the actual page number 6 at the bottom of the, okay. It says, it addresses, actually, case studies of vaccine safety. This report includes case studies of HPV and rotavirus vaccines as contrasting examples of vaccine introduction, reception, and response. Now, you remember the problems with HPV vaccines and such, okay? You remember this. They are learning from their past mistakes. I just want to point out, page 6, there it is. If you scroll down to page 18, going through this very quickly, and folks, you can download this and read it for yourself. Page 18. Let's see here. On the right-hand side, I've got this bookmarked and marked. Sorry, I didn't give you the heads up on this, Eric. If you look at the bottom right, let's see here. Yeah, the bottom right section of page 18. The green, there it is right there. Under considering new strategic objectives, there is a communications section, but probably also, there is a communications section, but probably also need an advocacy stream of work to develop political will to build effective AEFI surveillance and response systems. The thing I want to point out here, the phrase political will is rife throughout all of this. Building political will, whether it's for the response to the rollout of, quote, vaccines, or the response to the hesitancy as well as the uprisings. Okay, that was 18, right? So if you go down to 22, 23, and even 20, let's fast forward to 26 real quick here. The conclusions, page 26, discusses the conclusions. And I won't read the entire thing, but if you folks want to download this, make a note that the conclusions are very interesting because they address persisting vaccine safety themes. Well, in order to really do that, there has to be a problem. And it goes back to 2012, prior to 2012, to Blueprint 1.0. People challenging the narratives of those people, of experts saying, hey, you know what? Despite the problems with vaccines, we have to combat this using social media and media platforms. In other words, they have compromised and confiscated media, social media, and other platforms to make sure that we don't question the narrative. So there it is right there. And between yesterday, the video today, that document, and the fact that the current state of information with respect to the current flux of individuals into the healthcare system saying, oh, I need a test, and ER saying, okay, come on in. As a matter of fact, yeah, you're positive. We're going to admit you, although in a normal situation, we wouldn't admit you, but we're going to admit you anyway. The money that flows for such diagnoses and treatment to the hospital system But the overwhelming of the hospital system is intended to bring down the hospital system. I don't know if that made sense to you, but that's where we're at. Because remember, the ACA, Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, hey, completely transform the entire country, fundamentally change, transform the entire country. How? Take 25% of our economy and do that. All right. And just break it down. Overload the system. And that's what's happening, folks. And you, again, 12 months from now, you won't recognize the healthcare system. All right, before we get to Richard, you know, I've got one word for you, and that's policy genius. You know, that's all one word, policy genius. That's right. Hey, if someone is relying or relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, an aging parent, or even a business partner, you know what? You need life insurance. And if you're old like me, you've experienced loss. You've seen a lot of loss. And, you know, life insurance can give you the peace of mind that if something happens to you, your loved ones would have a financial cushion to pay for things like, oh, I don't know, rent, mortgage, loans, cost of education. Hey, how about just everyday expenses? Don't leave them hanging in the lurch. Be responsible. And you know, typically, life insurance gets more expensive as you age, so it's smart to get a policy sooner rather than later. And we, none of us are getting any younger, so keep that in mind. Here's what you need to do. Head over to policygenius.com. Remember, that's one word, policygenius.com, and answer a few questions about yourself. In minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find your best price. And do you know what the great thing about this is? You can save up about 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. That's right. You can. It's a lot of money to be saving. Their licensed experts will help you understand the options, your options, and apply for a policy. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies, and they don't add on any extra fees to sell or sell your info to third parties. Well, that's great. So here's what you need to do. Head over to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. You know what? You'll thank me later. You'll be glad you did this, taking care of business here in the new year. Policygenius.com. Fine folks over there. I want to thank them. All right. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. I want to bring him on. And here we go. Let's rock with Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to ProvisInstitute.com and bookmark that website, as well as take advantage of all the books he's got for sale, including Saving the Constitution, which you know about. Hey, also the economic books, because the economy is a big deal now, especially Conservative Treehouse reported that another 370,000 workers quit in November. The total quits rate now at 4.5 million. And of course, but hey, folks, the economy is the greatest it's been in 40 years. Despite this, don't believe what you see with your own eyes. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Listen to us. We know better. But here to set us straight, Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com, Saving the Constitution, Bathroom Economics, and many more, including the Liberty Series. That's ProvisInstitute.com. Richard, come on board, and let's talk.
I'm here, and for sure, we know the right thing, don't we?
We know so. The
right stuff.
No doubt. I defer to you.
I'm only chuckling because that's what everybody says. Well, but we do. This is not fake. We do know the right thing.
Yeah.
And the things that they're talking about that you just talked about over the last 2019, over that era.
Yeah.
If folks had had my books, they wouldn't have known about the conferences, but they would have known what happened before January of 2020. They would have known that.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not the least bit surprised at the stuff you just showed about the conference of the people that are talking about doing it back in 19.
You named the organizations in the Liberty Series. Folks, I'm telling you, it's all there. What you just saw is all there in the Liberty Series, which I have right here. That's why I'm pointing down there. So, yeah.
An interesting comment. Partners with the World Economic Forum. Oh, that just means partners with the Illuminati. That just means partners with the destruction of the world. That just means partners with the international banking establishment. That's all that means. And that's the goal, get all these people done. I mean, we are on the cusp of not having a country, literally. Now, let's just take a second. I've got this right here. It just came in today on the News with Fuse. Bradley Dean wrote this. He's talking about, this is the title, "Let Me Get This Right. You want the same Supreme Court to weigh in on vaccine mandates? Are we looking forward to the court, that Supreme Court, to decide whether the mandates on the vaccines are constitutional or not, and therefore legal or not?" Oh, my. Well, isn't this, I'm just going to read a few things now. Is this not the same Supreme Court that committed oligarchy, which means a committed crime, when taking prayer out of the schools? Is this not the same Supreme Court that said it was a choice to murder your own babies? Is this not the same Supreme Court that has said pornography was free speech? Is this not the same court that stated that teaching the young to murder their fellow students through video games? Is this the same court that has crossed the clear lines between church and state in assuming authority it never had? Is this the same Supreme Court, namely Chief Roberts, who has turned the Affordable Care Act into a tax? And don't forget about Brett Kavanaugh, who played the pro-lifers until he was on the bench. Don't forget Amy Barrett, the Trump appointee, who denied students their right to refuse vaccines at Indiana College. Ah, God, what, can't get the blooming page to turn. There it is, did it. How about the international globus, Sonia Sotomayor, who arrived just in time for the illegals? That is not how the judges are supposed to act, nor is it what the Constitution teaches. Liberty is the right to do what the law permits. These are not above the law, nor are they a law unto themselves. We can clearly see that these said judges are acting out like devils they are, while Americans are in hopes that they will act as righteous judges that they swore to be. I think, and I just read a little bit of this, I think that's an outstanding article. I mean, there's stuff there that I didn't put in volume 4 that I would have if I'd have known about it, but I didn't find all this stuff. He's got a lot of things cited. There's another article there today by Kellogg, Nelson Kellogg, or Kellogg Nelson, one of the other, first article on the page, who's talking about things that are going on in the Convention of States. Guys, we're being taken down the road to the destruction of our country. And we're sitting back saying, oh, well, oh, well, oh, well.
Well, let me ask you about the Supreme Court, if I may. All right. So yes. Marbury versus Madison determined that any decision, any court decision, any law, any mandate, any utterance that is against the Constitution is not a valid law, mandate, utterance, or whatever in terms of what happens here in America. What the hell happened to that? What happened to that?
Well, you see, the whole words of that decision. Now, I may not get them precisely right, but these are the words of that decision. Any law, and now he's talking about laws of Congress, any law not constitutional is null and void. And through judicial review, we will establish whether they are constitutional or not.
Oh.
And that's where the nub of it is. We, through constitutional to judicial review, will decide what's called constitutional. In 1820, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter that said, it's not up to the Supreme Court to decide what's constitutional, it's up to the people. And if they don't know how to do it, you don't take away from them, you teach them. Folks, we have been hoodwinked since 1803 to believe that the attorneys and the judges have the right to do whatever they like. Then in 1816, Marshall took away states' rights. He destroyed states' rights by saying, we will review all constitutions and laws of the states. And then, because he didn't have the authority in the Constitution to do any of this, in 1819, he declared that we have the authority from the people. We get our authority from the people. That's the sequence of events that occurred under his realm. Nobody reports the one that happened in the early 30s when Jackson said after they made a decision? Jackson said, well, you've made your decision, you enforce it. And then he went ahead and did what they said he should not do. Well, the truth of the matter is he should not have done that. Nonetheless, he had that power. And the Supreme Court doesn't have that power, ever.
You're talking 1830 now, right?
Yes. Okay. Did I say 1930s?
Yeah, I got that. Because I knew Jackson wasn't around. I mean, yeah.
Yep. So Jackson wasn't really there in 1930. That was another guy who was screwing our country up.
Right. So, okay.
I was 32, actually. Go ahead.
Okay, so you made some really great points. And by the way, folks, see, Liberty Series, okay, you'd have this information. All of Richard Proctor's books, ProvisInstitute.com, so you need that background. But okay, so let me ask this. The issues up for consideration now going to be coming out in spring or summer of this year include removing or overturning Roe v. Wade. And I understand the problems with that descriptive phrase, but okay, we'll go with that. And people threatening, well, there's going to be hell to pay. If that happens, then what we're going to do is we're going to load up the Supreme Court and we are going to just, just really load them up with basically socialists. And is that even possible? I don't even know where to go with that. Okay, go ahead.
It is possible. There is no limit on the number of people on the Supreme Court. That can be any number we choose to have. So if they, like Roosevelt threatened to do, if they loaded up over and over and over again with more dishonest people, they can get what they want, and they can. And we think the Supreme Court is the last word, so that's why they get away with it. If we, the people, would understand what the Supreme Court is supposed to do in Article 3, it's very clear, then we would understand that loading it up wouldn't make any difference because it still wouldn't be a law. And the states could nullify everything that comes out of it. Folks, that's what could happen. And that's the solution. The states. The states are the solution. The problem is that our states' governments have turned into parrots of the federal government.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that question. Thank you for, and I'll let you continue. Go ahead.
I really wanted to get this point across about the Supreme Court. It is not a lawmaking body. It is not law. It's opinion, and that's very different. All legislative powers in herein granted shall be vested in the Congress. I'm going to read it the way we would. All legislative power will be in the Congress of the United States, which is the Senate and the House. They are the only legislative powers. Executive orders aren't legislative. Regulations from these regulatory agencies that we have multitude of, what I'm talking about, BLM and all these people that are trying to tell the farmers in the world what to do. They don't have any laws. They don't pass laws. They have regulatory stuff. That's not law. They're still going to fine you, and the justice system is going to agree with them. Now, isn't that interesting? The justice system is going to say you violated a non-law, therefore we're going to fine you. That's where our justice system is.
So then to bring it relevant, or not relevant, but I guess relevant to today. So if a case comes before the Supreme Court, let's say United Airlines, or I'll use Pan Am, the no longer, Pan Am Airlines says every employee must be thrice vaccinated or vaccinated in their term and thrice boosted and, wear a propeller hat on their head or whatever during the flight and, dance on one foot. If the Supreme Court says this is what you must, if there's a disagreement between United Airlines and people, and the Supreme Court says, that's okay. We're gonna allow that. The Pan Am, you're going to have your people jabbed, and yes, propeller cap, and yes, jump up and down. If the Supreme Court rules like that, can they rule like that, number one?
Yes, they can.
Okay. And is that even legal? And where does that, so then what happens? Because that's against the Constitution, right?
Well, yes, but nobody knows that because they don't pay any attention. They haven't got this book.
Right. Saving the Constitution, by the way. All right. So, yes. Yeah.
So yes, they could say that. And what would happen? The people would roll over. Today's people would just roll over and say, okay, I guess we better do that because the Supreme Court said it's a law.
So how do we fight that? How do we say no? And because let's say everyone in America, every American citizen's got to get the jab. Every American citizen's got to do XYZ, whatever it might be. How do we fight that?
We fight that with education. Every American citizen doesn't have to do it. We fight that with someone who will teach what the Constitution says. I got an email yesterday from a fellow in the Northeast area of the country who said, I would have a group together, but I can't find anybody interested. There's the key. He's trying to have a 16 group people together, and he can't find anybody that's interested. And that's the key. Nobody can find people who want to know about the Constitution. Oh, it's boring. Constitution, I know that. Ha! I've heard about that all my life. I know what it is. No, you do not. You do not know what it is. You haven't heard about the Constitution at all, ever. You have heard about theories, stuff that somebody puts out that they like to have. You've heard about prejudices. You have not heard about the Constitution. In fact, we stopped hearing about the Constitution in 1790. Wasn't that just ratified in 1788? Yeah, it was. And we stopped again in 1791, and we stopped again in 1796. We stopped again in 1803, and we stopped again in 1804. We stopped. Can I carry on? We stopped again in 08. Those were major items that nobody paid any attention to. Oh, okay. It must be true. That must be how it is. The Constitution has been shredded. It's like last week when you said to me, and I kind of said something a little bit different. You said we had one of the best medical systems in the world. And I kind of contradicted you and said, no, we didn't. Yep. They don't teach medicine. They teach keep sick so we can sell you more medicines.
Yep.
You're right that it is the best one in the world, but it doesn't do the stuff it's supposed to do with the best stuff in the world they have. You pick that up? They could find ways.
You are right. I guess I was referring to the infrastructure, the setup, as opposed to, we'll say, like the national healthcare system in Canada or the UK, in my view.
Yes.
But you were dead on accurate. As I was looking, doing my homework for today, and seeing how they want to destroy the infrastructure of our healthcare system today, look, they're not going to have to go too far to destroy it. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead.
No, it's already there. That's one of the worst places for masks, social distancing, all that garbage. That's one of the worst places for the worst stuff we were ever forced down our throats, unless, of course, we closed our mouths. It's forced down our throats over and over and over again. The media, everybody, the fourth branch of the government, of the fake government, I'll call it that way. It's the fourth branch of the fake government. The true government is the people, and the people aren't paying any attention. I'm sorry. Let's just talk about it. I live in an area here, Kaysville, Utah. These people are, they all claim to be, they believe the Constitution absolutely. Yes, sir, I know. But not one of them, not one, will come and ask me questions. Not one. And I've invited people to come to my home. Come on. Not one. That's the kind of thing we're faced with. Not one. And everybody's faced with it. And here, you know, that's, let me see. It's kind of like those folks that discovered germs. Curie, Madame Curie and her husband or something like that. They knew about germs and they knew about how to prevent it. But they died because they didn't do what they knew. Other people did, but they didn't. So we have the same kind of thing. We think we know what the Constitution is, and we're going to die by not using it. And it's not tough to read. It's only 4,000 words. It's only 4,000 words.
Right.
Comic books. Some comic books will have that many words. It's just a few pages, 20 about. It's hard to read. Yeah, it's in a language that's a little different than ours. The 10th Amendment, for example, is very clear to the people in the days of yore. But today, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, people read that and say, and they go on. It doesn't really say that. In today's language, it says the federal government can do nothing that's not in the Constitution, and the states can do everything else unless the Constitution prohibits it. That's what it says. And one above it, the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Oh my, all that says is the right, all the rights aren't listed. You got way more rights than that. That's what that says. But it's not easy to understand. So people don't read it. And that's the problem. And when someone comes along that tries to put it in language that they could all understand easily, now I don't care about that.
Well, let me ask you, of 535 yes. members of Congress, senators, yeah. House members,
yeah,
how many know? How many understand the Constitution and follow the Constitution?
Oh, are you asking me the real life stuff or maybe yeah. mine?
No, real life
stuff. The real life stuff, none. Not one of those people are following the Constitution as it was intended to be. Not one.
That gives me hope.
Yeah, that's where it is. Think about it for a moment. Not one. They will convene electoral college in Washington, D.C., won't they? And they'll be happy to do that. And they want that there, don't they?
Yep.
Did anybody stand up and say, no, that's not constitutional? Nobody did. Did anybody stand up and say, we shouldn't do it that way? Nobody did. But the Constitution is very clear. The electoral college members will meet in their respective states,
you know,
on the same day.
And this, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because this even comes into play because the media – yeah, in the left, they're going to make this big deal out of January 6th. The anniversary is coming up. Oh, my God, that's all you're going to hear every day is January 6th. An insurrection, riot in the Capitol, this and that. But, you know, yeah. And it pains me to see, look, I'm a big fan of, for example, Peter Navarro. But if he, who was part of President Trump's cabinet, now, if he would have handled things a little differently, more constitutional, shall we say, because he said, I did everything by the book, which is true, by the book he had, but not by the Constitution, the electoral colleges would have met where? In the states, as you stated.
Yes.
And you know,
in the states.
That's right. So this is why we have the problem. One of the reasons why we've got the problems that we have. So saving the Constitution as a companion to the Constitution and as an instruction, further instruction manual points this out. So,
yes.
You know, folks, so your January 6th stuff, okay. It could have
that's
been
all avoided. Garbage. That was all garbage.
Exactly.
Every bit of that was planned insurrection,
yes,
but not by the Trump supporters.
Correct.
That was planned insurrection by the federal government who wanted to get that, to get those kinds of things against the people.
That's right. That's right. And folks, look up Ray Epps. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, yes. So, and so
nothing's coincidental.
No. And again, it pains me to think that we've got such bright minds out there who are seemingly attempting to do the right thing, but they don't have, for example, the knowledge that you have and that's in your book about doing it the right way. I mean, I'll tell you what. Saving the Constitution, folks, you need to get that. Go to provisinstitute.com. Go ahead.
You know, some people have suggested, I get emails, suggested that I get on, this show or that show or the other show. You know, big name like Glenn Beck and
sure.
Tucker Carlson. Big names, you know. Get on his show.
Yeah.
Get on his show. Hey, he won't give me the time of day. My name's not right.
Well, believe me. I know.
They say, send a book. They'll read it. No, they won't. They get thousands of books. They're not going to read one that comes from some guy named Richard Proctor out in Utah. We don't care about him. He doesn't know anything. That's exactly what they will say, and they won't do anything.
You know, I've never seen, and I'll just say this, because I get books all the time, all right? And I try to read, at least read as much of each book that I get, and that's a true statement. But I don't know. Eric, how many books a week do we get, roughly? Half a dozen?
Yeah.
At least, yeah. Man, many words over there. So, you know, if we get that many books, I can imagine. But some of the books are really out there. I mean, way out there. I like your books because they're not way out there. They're very precise. They're well cited. I don't know where I was going with this except to say, you know what? It's a shame. Like some of the bigger platforms. Hey, Joe Rogan, you know, they had Dr. God bless Joe Rogan. His numbers, all right? Boy, you'd be on Joe Rogan. You'd set the world on fire. But, again, you know, it's sad. It's really a sad thing where people can't get into the higher numbered platforms. That's all I'm saying. Well,
let's just look at my personal situation. I was on InfoWars with David Knight for a year and a half.
Yep.
Every other Friday for a year and a half. And one of David's listeners called on the line when Alex Jones was there. Alex Jones was called while he was on the air by one of David Knight's listeners. You've got to get Richard Proctor on the air with you. He turned to his producer and said, get him. That's on the air. She called me 2 days later. Let's get a set schedule. So he did. I was ready. 10 o'clock on a, it was 12 o'clock on a particular day. I was ready. Folks, they called me 2 hours before. We'll schedule it another time. We're really busy today, and I've never heard from them since.
And you're not alone in that. I mean, that's happened to me in a number of venues, I understand that. Okay. I get that.
Me too. I understand it, but I don't have the right name. If I'd been Glenn Beck, he wouldn't have stopped for a second. I'd been Rush Limbaugh, he wouldn't have stopped for a second. Yes.
Exactly.
But I'm Richard Proctor. He don't know nothing.
And this is the great part of the alternative media or the new media, the media that we're in right now, because you don't know who's listening. I mean, not to brag or anything like that, but we surpassed 1.2 million downloads across all platforms in December. So that's a lot of downloads. And that's across the globe, and that's a course of the month of programs. Now, obviously, Rogan does that like in a minute. Great. But there are some real crown jewels of broadcasts out there. For example, I cited a video earlier in this broadcast. Look, I don't know who did that video, but whoever did that video, the information in that was right on the money. I verified it, and it was well done. And we need people like that and people like you to be out there on these shows. And it's difficult to talk about because, you know, hey, things happen. And you know, I get that. Richard, I get that. Things happen.
Yeah, they do. I understand that.
But you know what? The information that you've got, especially you with respect to the Constitution as well as the economy and the background, man, it's some gold that's in the books and in your head. So it's good stuff. All right. Yeah. What are we going to do? Yeah.
You see, we're talking about things that are human nature. We've got lots of stuff to do in our country, and we do that which we feel is the most important for us. And some days we feel a nap is most important for us, so we take it. That's not wrong. And some days we feel like we want to watch the television. We don't want to watch these shows, and they're boring. I don't want to watch a show about that, a documentary about that. So you don't. And you move on. And you have preconceived notions of what things will be. That's normal. And some of those preconceived notions cannot be disrupted because they've been taught for so long. And that's a problem. You see, I've talked to people, I know the Constitution. So I ask them a simple question. How many representatives should you have from your state? And I've only had answers to that correctly of people who've listened to me. Nobody else ever knows that answer unless they've listened to me talking about it. And that's the way it goes. Everybody thinks they know. Nobody does. For example, I read an article today and the guy said, Supreme Court, it has no activities except the law. Oh, the law?
Huh? Yeah.
What? What he meant was, what he really meant was that they decide whether the law is constitutional or not. What he should have said was following the law. But he didn't say that.
On a good day, I suppose. But okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, and that goes on all the time. Things like that occur. People that you have great respect for will just not put in the right word or two and you get the wrong opinion. Because we've been taught forever that the Supreme Court is superior to everything in the country. Our whole lives we've been taught that. And to get somebody to say it isn't, and get the book out, you know, the real book out, and say it isn't,
Let me ask you a question then. Given the state, the place, the state where we're at today in America, you know, I'm reminded of that adage. Did you ever try to save a drowning person? A person who's drowning, you go out to save them. Now, I've never been a lifeguard, but okay. You know, there's a chance that person is going to take you down with them because they're absolutely frantic.
Yes.
Okay, so.
They will.
Here's my question to you. Are we talking to the wrong people? And see, what do we need to do to right this ship, to get our country back to the spirit of 1776? How do we get back to the Constitution? What's the best way? Because we get a lot of people who don't even, you see these men on the street interviews where they don't even know what flipping state they're in except of confusion or who the president is or who, they couldn't find where they're at on a map, you know? So the level of lack of intelligence, and I'm talking about intelligence, is scary. So, I mean, are we lost?
Yes, we are. We're lost. Here's. Do you ever watch Jay Leno? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean,
Jay Leno, I watched him. Every now and again, Jay Leno did what he called the jaywalk.
Right.
And he would go out and ask questions, filming the people, ask questions. And he went up. I know he didn't show us all of them because a lot of them would have known the answers, but he picked the ones that he thought were interesting, most interesting. He'd talk to school teachers, teaching the school. Who did we fight in World War II? They don't know. Mexico? They don't know. These are the teachers. And he has those kinds of questions throughout all the time. And people that should know that are teaching others didn't. And that's crucial. For example, I know that there are, I know of an individual, not going to use any names here, but I know of an individual who I talked with him a long time ago, about Article 5 and the number of methods there are to amend the Constitution listed in Article 5. He argued with me up and down and sideways. It isn't so. Well, we parted. About 5 years later, he read my book and said, "You're absolutely right." He changed his mind. But he didn't change his mind because I hammered at him. He just changed his mind because he read the book.
But my point is, we can't even get to that point.
Right.
We're not. I mean, we are so far below zero, the general population.
I don't know how we get to the general population because 51% or more are on the government dole, and they don't want anything except the Democratic Party to give them more money. And that may be larger now because of all the money that was passed out last year. That may be larger.
Which, and folks, if you haven't already done so, Bathroom Economics, tremendous economic books at ProvisInstitute.com. Especially now when you look at the job numbers. And Richard, isn't it funny? By the way, there it is on screen, Bathroom Economics, Understanding Economics in just a few sittings. I'm going to tell you something. I learned a lot from Bathroom Economics. I learned a lot from that book. And don't let the title fool you, although it's a cutesy title. It's got a lot of great information in there. So you know, we're being told, hey, this is the greatest economy that we've had in 40 years. You got, despite the fact that 370,000 workers quit in November, the people who quit the workforce since 2019, what, 4.5 million? But hey, don't let that fool you. Don't let that fool you. And it breaks it down from the report. Quits increased in several industries, largest being food services, healthcare, and social assistance. What did I say at the earlier part of the show? There you go. So, yeah.
You see, but there you go. That's people that have quit. If we put the number that don't have jobs, unemployed,
yep,
then that number grows tremendously.
Absolutely.
And in many of those cases, I'm not going to say 100%, in many of those cases, it's based on the money they get from the government.
That's true. I know people who are getting money from the government who say, you know, I can't afford to go back to work. I'd lose money.
Yep.
And then you got people saying, well, you ought to raise, see, that's a case for raising the minimum wage. No, it's not. It's a case.
Doesn't do a thing for you. It just destroys more jobs.
Right. It's a case for getting off the federal teat. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you see, that's a constitutional error. Welfare started in the 30s with a new definition. We take care of everybody. That's the definition of welfare. So that means if you're unemployed, we're going to take care of you. So you don't have to get a job. That means that if you're hungry, we'll take care of you. You don't have to get money. You don't have to work. And we have a whole level of people, a whole category of people in our country that don't work because the government will take care of them. That started in the 30s, and look where it is today. I saw a headline. This is quite a while ago. It was talking about the biggest governments in the world. And the second largest government in the world was the Health and Welfare Services of the United States. The only government bigger than that was the federal government itself. That's bigger than Russia's government when we were in the Cold War. And that's the indication.
Wow.
That's when the war of poverty was going on, by the way, what just made more poverty. Government never fixes anything. Government screws it up. Keep government out of business. Keep government doing what it's supposed to do. What the executive department is supposed to do.
And just to piggyback off that, anytime the government declares a war on them, whatever follows, let me tell you something. It's going to be the most piss poor war ever done. I mean, the war on opiates. I mean, who suffers from that? Chronic pain people. The war on terrorism. Who suffers from that? The law-abiding citizen. The war on whatever. It's all BS.
Yep, it always is.
All right.
It always is.
Continue.
Well, for example, I'll give you another example. We all know this. This is the kind of stuff you're just talking about, but it's a little different. A young lady came on the phone on the air when that farce from Kenya was running for president. And she said, I got a phone. I'm voting for him. I got a free phone. I got a free phone. So I thought to myself, I'd like a free phone. So I got in touch with the agency to get a free phone. She got one. I want one. Oh, no, you filed taxes. You can't have one. Did you hear that sentence? You filed a tax return. You can't have a phone. And that's what government does. It creates things that it tries to tell us that it's curing. I have another illustration. I can go on with these for a long time. I won't, but just one more for sure. This particular time happened when I was back in my master's degree program. This is clear back in the 70s. And I was reading a book that was current about a company and a city up in New York area, but I may not have that exactly right, but that's not important. The city had migrant workers coming through, and it was cold in the wintertime where that city was, and they all were getting on welfare. They weren't going home. They were going back, they're staying there and getting on welfare of the city. So the city said, well, let's get something out of all this welfare. So they asked them or required them, I don't care which word you use, that they take a job to help the city, clean it up, fix the parks, mow the grass, shovel the sidewalk. What? Some stuff for the city. Well, somebody complained to the federal government. And the federal government came back to the state and said, if you don't stop that, we're cutting off your funds. So the state went to them and told them to stop it. And they did.
Yeah.
And that shows the trap of being indebted to the government. And that shows the trap of the welfare program we've got. And that shows the trap of the stupidity of our leaders and our lack of following the Constitution and the idea of welfare. The idea of welfare is ingrained into us now. Welfare means taking care of a person. It does not mean taking care of a person. It means ensuring that you have an environment where you can earn money and work and do stuff for yourself.
You know,
that's what the 28 Dictionary says, guys. That's what it says. That's what's written.
So, okay, I received an email, and I want to ask you about this. In fact, the emailer asked me to ask you about this. There was a recent discovery, I believe it was in the borough of Manhattan, I don't have the email up here, where the DA was instructed, or the DA said, look, we're not going to, you know what, I should have brought it up here. We're not going to prosecute or incarcerate anything below like involuntary manslaughter, rape and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was there was only a small sliver, a very high bar to be incarcerated in the five boroughs of New York City. The decision by the Soros-appointed DA. The question to you was, is that whole, I mean, who sets up the individual locale, like who would set up the, does the Constitution have any oversight over, and I know the answer to this, but again, I'm asking on behalf of an emailer. Does the Constitution have anything to say about this?
No, it does not.
Okay.
The state Constitution would, but okay. Not the federal.
Now, okay, the state constitutions are self-limiting or supposed to be self-limiting, the government, that is, right? The same idea, as long as they conform to the federal constitution. That's with state constitutions, right?
Pretty well close to that, yeah. They follow it really close, but they have some things that are different all the way through each one of them.
All right. So it's not a constitutional issue to the emailer. And I don't have the email up, so I don't. Okay. All right.
We get that mixed up. People are saying, well, is it constitutional for the company won't let me, the store won't let me into without wearing a mask. Is that constitutional? Sure it is. What? Can't be constitutional. I've got rights. Sure you do. Your right in that case is go to a different store. But I want to go to that store. Well, then you got to do what they do. They are a private business. Now, I will go to that store and not wear a mask, period. And I'll make a big thing about it if I don't get in. A big thing about it. Everybody around me will know that happened. I won't argue. I'll just talk really loud.
But you're actually going against a private entity, a private business.
Yes, I am.
You do that. Okay.
On purpose. Yes.
Right.
I'm not saying they're unconstitutional. I'm going about, I've got rights to go where I want, according to the Constitution. But I don't have rights to go on his property if he doesn't want me to. That's trespassing. Well, but I do it anyway because of the reason it's being done.
So I seem to remember an instance about a bakery refusing to make a wedding cake for a couple of homosexuals, for a homosexual wedding. And that became a big thing. In fact, they try to get this under the Civil Rights Act, you know, and all that. So,
And the Civil Rights Act is unconstitutional also. Go ahead.
I was hoping you would address that.
And the Disability Act is unconstitutional too.
There you go. See, did you know that, folks? Saving the Constitution. You would know that Liberty Series as well, that there's some undergirding there. You would know that. Go ahead.
People don't realize how many things are unconstitutional. Here's a thought. I watched a video over the weekend. I watched more than one. But anyway, I watched a video. First thing up on the screen is against federal law. Now, did you hear that? It's against federal law for you to copy this or copy that or copy that on this VA. And the FBI is going to prosecute, find you and prosecute. Well, there's two things there. The federal law doesn't reach down to the state level. So it is being against the federal law is not germane. The Constitution does say in paragraph 8 of volume of Article 1, Section 8, paragraph 8, it does say that they're to provide for, promote the progress. Oh, dear me, I read it the other day and I thought I was going to be able to go right to it. It says that, that they've got to set up some stuff for copyrights and that kind of thing. And it's right here on the page. I'm looking right at it, but I'm not seeing it. Anyway, there is something set up by copyrights to protect copyright material for authors. It says that exactly. So now what we have here is we have a situation where trademarks and copyrights are carried to the extreme. They're carried out hundreds of years. But apart from that, I'm not violating a copyright if I read something from a book and copy it and put it up on my wall. That's not a violation of a copyright. The copyright is protecting the income of the guy who wrote it.
Right.
So if I put it up on my wall, or I don't give him proper credit, or I don't handle it properly, then that's a violation.
Right. Which
that's the violation. Okay, now.
And I understand that. Go ahead.
Oh, now, here I have a lot of videos. I have 73 videos that are before 1930, down clear to 1903. Those are very hard to get and very difficult to keep going. So I would like to copy all of those onto my computer digitally so that I can save them. And if I lose the video, because that's possible, DVDs are not forever. If that's possible, then I could just make a new DVD. Well, that's absolutely against the law. If the FBI discovered I did that, they'd take me to court and throw me in jail for 100 years. And it's a minor thing compared with throwing a father in jail for trying to get the school to protect his daughter from rape. They'll throw him in jail. I think they did.
You just have to change your name to Hunter Biden. You'll be all right.
Yeah. I could do that. Then I could get away with anything I want. See, it's the name that matters.
Exactly.
It's the name. I can get all kinds of things done if I got the right name. Well, if I had the name of Rothschild, I'd really be in business. Even if I wasn't a part of the family, I would be, just because I had that name. I had to change my name to Rothschild. Oh, no.
How about Richard Rockefeller?
That would work. That would work. People don't realize what Rockefeller did and his foundation still does. They don't realize those things because they don't read the Liberty series. That's why they don't. They don't know who the bad guys are. That's why they don't. In the very first pages of Volume 1, I list the names of about 20 of these people. All you got to do is keep track of their families. The Bush family belongs to the Harriman dynasty.
Yep.
Did you know that? Did you know that the Bush family had 7 members in the Yale organization called Skull and Bones? Now, here are the rules to be in that Skull and Bones organization. You must be a senior. You must meet the initiation when you're junior year. So you start as a senior in that. So you have to be a junior to be selected, and you have to be a senior to be in Skull and Bones, okay? Then you have to go through a significant initiation all the way through that. And now you're set up to be in the Skull and Bones organization, which then funnels you into the CFR, Council of Foreign Relations. So you see, what we've got is we've got a system set up. 7 of the family, of the Bush family, got through those qualifications. And already, just having 7 guys, a senior at Yale, during the particular necessary year, because there's only 15 chosen. If you're the 16th, you're not there. They choose only 15 each year. That's all they do. No more. So you have to, it's a very select group. So it's amazing. No, it isn't amazing that the Bush family got 7. But it isn't amazing because they're a part of the family, the Harriman dynasty.
And this is where bloodlines come in.
Yes.
And again, as delineated in the Liberty series, folks, the bloodlines, people often gravitate toward the muddier aspect of the bloodlines. But the way you lay it out, and I gotta tell you, I can follow it and I can understand how the family connections create these dynasties, which last for generations And we're seeing it play out today because the very same people who are enslaving each one of us are the very people mentioned in or the organizations or families or dynasties.
You know, think about marriage for a moment. People marry those whom they know.
Yep.
Well, the people that are in these organizations that we're talking about gather a lot together. Now, I'm not talking about the peripheral. I'm talking about the ones that are really in charge. See, the CFR has 11,000 or more members in the country. 11,000 or more. 11,000 aren't meeting. But the ones that are meeting in the Pratt House, they are. The Pratt House is the cream of the crop, you might say. I don't think of them that way, but that's the way to say it. They're in the Pratt House. They're there. They control the whole issue, the whole thing. They control what's printed in the biweekly Foreign Affairs magazine, bi-monthly Foreign Affairs magazine. They control that. And they use that as a signal to tell all the rest of the people what to do. All right. So they're in charge. Those people meet together and their families meet together. And their families meet with the other foundation guys from the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation and all the others and the Clinton Foundation. All of these people meet together. Don't we have a foundation with Bill Gates too? The Bill Gates. These people all meet together. So who are they going to marry? They're going to marry people they meet in their own society. So the bloodlines stay pure unless somebody gets into it by accident, and that's Bill Gates because he made a lot of money and he got into it. And Soros, I think, is the same way. Made a lot of money and he got into it because that's the cream of the crop. Wealthy people want to be a part of that. There's more money there than everywhere else in the world because they've set things up in governments all over the world to funnel all their money and all their wealth to them individually.
That must be why you and I aren't invited.
Yeah, we're not invited. That's right.
That breaks my heart. You know?
It's name, bloodlines. It's who your family is. It's all those kinds of things. That's who's running our world today. Not just the United States. Every world in the country. CFR decides, not CFR. The Council on Foreign Relations gives instructions to people and sends them to their countries to do them. And they do them. I give you an example of that very thing. A few years ago, the President of the United States and the Congress were trying to decide whether or not to give a $300 check to everybody that filed tax return that particular year. I don't know why, I don't remember why, but it was to bolster a little bit of money into the people, okay? $300 to everybody. They dithered about it from November, and they dithered about it in December, and they dithered about it in January. They went to the Council of Foreign Relations and cut the checks the 1st of February. What do you think happened? The World Economic Forum. They went to that forum, and then they cut the checks the 1st of February. The forum meets the last week of January. What do you think happened at the World Economic Forum on that subject, when our people got there? They got their instructions, do it. So they did. Folks, that's how it's going. That's how it's going. There are a lot of people. I've watched the Bilderberger groups, the Bilderberger folks, people who have attended the Bilderberger annual meetings.
Yep.
I've watched those attendees, and I've gotten sometimes notes from them. And in one of the places, one of the guys that was there, two of them, they're from Portugal, and they were, you know, low government functionaries, but they were there. And they talked to the guys, the Wheel and Deal and the organization, and the Wheel and Dealer said, you know, we're gonna get you guys into the government. So in a couple of years, both of them were in highfalutin places in the Portuguese government. How? Oh, guys, everything is done. There's no coincidence in government. And I have a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And that book talks about what his job was. His job was to go to countries that were not getting proper loans from the World Bank and the IMF, International Monetary Fund. They weren't doing the things they wanted them to do. They wanted to build a dam. We're going to loan you the money. They wouldn't accept it. His job was to go encourage them to accept it or kill them. That's his job. Kill them if they won't do it, and we'll put somebody in that will. That's what happened to Lincoln, you guys. That's what happened to Lincoln. He would not borrow money from Europe for the reconstruction of the United States. He would not do it. So they shot him. A hitman went there and shot him. Kennedy was trying to set up U.S. dollars, to print U.S. dollars. He's going to do it. I'm going to do it. Shot him. Folks, that's how it works. Scalia. Judge Scalia. I always say that wrong. Scalia. Judge Scalia. I don't know what he said, but I think I've got a source to find out, but I haven't looked at it yet. I don't know what he said, but whatever it was, they killed him. They didn't do it with a pistol, though. They did it in a way that everybody would think it wasn't them. But all the people in government would know.
Interesting.
Scalia was found one night. He was a happy, go-lucky person talking to everybody there in Texas. And he was talking to everybody, having a good evening, good night. He went to bed. The next morning, he was found laying on the bed, an unmuffled bed. Okay? He had not been in it. He was laying on the bed with a pillow over his face, dead. The coroner called it a heart attack, never showed up, or whatever she called it. They took him immediately to a crematorium and had him cremated. We're talking in 6 hours these things happened.
And folks, you know, again, the backdrop for all of this, the Liberty Series, go to provisinstitute.com. Seriously, get serious. This year, 2022, make it a point to educate yourself on everything, including and especially this stuff. The Liberty Series at provisinstitute.com. Link will be in the program description box. And while you're there, hey, bathroom economics, saving the Constitution, make it your new year resolution to, in fact, get those. And again, Richard Proctor, thank you, my brother. I mean, wow, a lot of information. Writing the Constitution, writing the ship. Long road ahead. Richard, thank you. Got to cut you loose or got to say goodbye?
Folks, good to be here. See you next week.
All right, my brother. All right. Folks, that'll do it for us tonight. May God bless each and every one of you. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Good night.